some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
This is Gary Butterfield.
This is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a tarnished favorite.
Yeah, and this week we are jumping into the body of the game. Last time we did our kind of broad overview, an introduction to Elden Ring itself, but we're ready to talk about story and areas and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for being patient, everybody. Mm-hmm. So we have an announcement right up front. We are recording the show and putting out the show slower than most people are playing, so I don't anticipate this being a problem. Mm-hmm. But just as an FYI, spoilers in this will be done differently than we've done it in the past. We alluded to that a little bit in the last episode, how like this game has multiple seeming kind of Anne Orlando moments.
Yeah.
But the structure of this game, it makes less sense for us to be coy about stuff, and that is going to be end up being lend itself to a spoiler policy that is like, I know it when I see it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, like we're not gonna just like tell you that Gwyn is the end boss. Oh shit.
Damn
it. Fuck.
No, it's fine. We already disclaimed it. Don't worry.
Oh phew. Yeah. We're not gonna talk about like end game reveals and things like that. But what we're going to try to avoid, we do want to set things up in context.
Yeah.
And we have no idea what order you're playing this game in. Because you can do things in a lot of different orders. There are also NPC quest lines that are kind of minor, where they're spread out over a large period of time. Like maybe you can't get the resolution for Bach the Seamster until 50 hours in. But it makes no sense to tell that story broken up like with 1 minute segments every 6 weeks.
Right. You know? Yeah. It's a lot.
It's not complicated enough.
It's a lot to keep track of. And what we wouldn't want to do is accidentally introduce Bach, who is a good boy. And then drop that and have him fall into like an errata or follow-up section. Like, hey, the super affecting thing that we just totally neglected to mention. Don't want to have that happen. So
we forget stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I was thinking about it is the way that we do Watch Out for Fireballs, and we've done some previous seasons of the show, is a little bit like a let's play or walkthrough where things are revealed along, you know, with the path that you might be playing the game. In my mind, I am conceiving of this season as closer to a source book.
Yeah.
Like I kind of want to create a source book for Elden Ring. Like a travel guide makes sense, but there's also a lot of weird fucked up little dudes and critters and stuff that it'd be cool to talk about.
Yeah. And so there are also like factions that are tied into people that we're not going to meet. And then we're going to learn that they, you know, they might be one thing, but then there's like a true nature reveal kind of deal. That's where things are going to get a little bit, kind of far in advance, where we're going to be casting ahead, but it is more interesting to talk about like why a tree sentinel is here. Possibly than it is to just kind of hint obliquely as to what it might be, helping to kind of put some things together advance, so we understand why it's important. Because I mean, something that is back in this, you know, something that people really associate mostly with Dark Souls 1 is enemies being in the proper place for their factions and what they are trying to accomplish.
Yes.
And it is interesting and good to talk about that.
Yeah. You know, the tree sentinel is a great example, because by no means are you really meant to fight the tree sentinel. Mm-hmm. When you run into him, we're going to cover the area he's in and talk about him this episode. He is meant to teach you about roaming bosses and teach you that you can run away. Mm-hmm. Basically, I think.
Yeah.
You don't really find out what tree sentinels are. It's not complicated. Like, yeah. Tree sentinels aren't, you know, deep lore, you know. But you don't find out what tree sentinels are until you've killed a few of them and gotten pieces of their equipment.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't make any sense to be like, oh yeah, and then this time later where you fight a tree sentinel, you pick up the shield that says what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just want to say what they are.
Yeah.
We're also, I want to throw this caveat out. I think that we are going to get stuff wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pretty good idea about Elden Ring.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm probably about 65% through my second playthrough. Mm-hmm. 65-70% through my second playthrough. And I have a pretty good idea about this stuff. There are still things that I, and then when I looked around, are still kind of question marks.
Yeah.
And they're kind of major things. There could very well be breakthroughs on those, or we could come up with them. Mm-hmm. So we might get some stuff wrong as well. Just know that it's going to be a little bit more forward casting than we usually do, but also an evolving work, like, yeah, an evolving concern.
Yeah. The cement is still wet. And so we need, yes, to be mindful of that, and possibly go back and fill in some footprints if need be, as it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. No, let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do. Yeah. You know, we talked about like character creation and stuff, but that is the first thing that you do when you get started. You know, mm-hmm, something that I like about this is that the descriptions of the different classes, and then of the different kind of appearances do imply a life before you kind of have arrived here, you know, like they are, mm-hmm, directly linked. Yeah. So like the one that I picked was like a seafarer, you know, somebody who just kind of ended up in the who ended up in the lands between just kind of by accident.
Yeah. Yeah. A water person.
Yeah.
A houseboat owner.
You
know, a salty sea dog.
Yeah.
This is all for headcanon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, role playing, like the Tarnished are all basically one class of people.
Yes.
In this, it's like what they did on their summer vacation, basically.
Right.
Kind of what you're choosing.
Yeah.
You get a keepsake again, and classic FromSoft fashion. You don't know what is good, and there is a clear kind of trap option.
Mm-hmm.
In the pendant or that gives you extra health. It's fine. It's a really minor bump, but it's, yeah, not nearly as good as some of the other stuff you can get here. And, yeah, there are also some things that are barely useful. Mm-hmm. As well.
Yeah. The all-stars to me seem to be the golden seed, which will give you another Estus, cracked pot, which once you get the ability to craft stuff, gives you an extra throwable, of, mm-hmm, you know, cracked pot kind of things. And then a stone sword key, which is kind of like taking the Pharaoh's lockstone.
Yes. Even though it does lead to a cool, also kind of trap, that you can get into. I also will go to bat for the soul item.
Okay.
That's there, because it gives you a lot,
yeah,
of souls. Like you get to start the game with like 5 extra levels or something, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
Like 3 to 5 extra levels. This opening cinematic is incredibly cool. I really love it. It is not 3D animation.
No.
These are still kind of painterly things, which lends itself to the aesthetic, you know, kind of painterly vibe of the game.
Mm-hmm. And I like that these can pop up as load screens later on too. These, mm-hmm, are just beautiful, beautiful art pieces. And they're complemented by, is this the first time we've had a male, voice do the intro outside of Sekiro?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. It's an incredible performance.
It's really good.
Just, yeah, the fear and reverence he has at the beginning and then at the turn that, oh,
yes,
that he does, yeah, kind of getting exultant. This rules. And I just can't tell you, you know, the whole opening of this game had me grinning from ear to ear, because, yeah, and, you know, by this point, you know, a couple of decades in, or a decade and some change in, there's a formula to these opening cutscenes. You know, we're gonna learn a little bit about what life used to be like before history began, and we're going to hear a bunch of names. We're gonna learn about a lot of fucked up dudes. Yep. And then a little bit about what a piece of shit we are.
Yeah. What a horrible, fucked up little man.
Yeah.
A lot of this stuff is also in the first trailer.
Yeah.
For this as well. Like, a lot of this material was covered. There is a, in the trailer version that shows this stuff, there is a major reveal in it that is really cleverly hidden, which is one of the things that we'll talk about way later.
Yeah.
But it's super cool. We start off, you know, he says that a fallen leaves tell a story. And these are the fallen leaves of the Erd tree, you know, which is in this game is kind of, you know, generally like a big world tree, life tree kind of thing. It is a representative or connected to the greater will, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
As a thing. And it is in trouble.
Yes.
You know, it's that is the reason why there are seeds everywhere, and that is the reason why there are leaves here. And it kind of explains, you know, it's almost like reading tea leaves.
Yeah.
To find out what happened almost.
Yeah. The Erd tree is kind of presented as this almost it's the afterlife for where people go after they die, souls and things like that.
But also just a big extant thing.
Oh yes, you can see it.
One of the things you notice when you get in this is there's no sun.
Nope.
There's a moon, but there's no sun. It's just the tree.
Yeah. Love it. We see a person smithing, and we get the sense that they are forging the Elden Ring, which is what the voice is talking about how this, you know, kind of object holds the world together, but it shatters in the lands between, which he refers to as our home across the fog.
Yes. The lands between are the world of Elden Ring. There is implied to be worlds outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
As well. That is something that is very vague, as you know, in addition to the game. And this shattering the Elden Ring is something that we'll end up talking about. That's kind of a late game thing as well.
Yeah.
But that a lot of the movers and shakers and stuff of the game are related to this event. So Queen Marika, who is kind of the goddess of the Queen Marika the Eternal, has jetted off. And this is in the wake of Godwin the Golden being killed in something called the Night of Black Knives. Also something we're going to talk about later. A really, really important historical event. This kind of focus on individual events like this. One of the things that I notice a lot when looking at Elden Ring lore, I've been trying to find are things that are feel like synthesis between George R. R. Martin and Miyazaki.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really George R. R. Martin thing.
Yeah.
Like the Night of Black Knives as an event that just has, you know, if you in Ice and Fire, like it is full of events like that.
Yeah.
Like individual events that had huge repercussions throughout history.
I'm not an Ice and Fire guy, but I am led to believe the Red Wedding is one of those.
Yeah. No, the Summer Hall, the tragedy at Summer Hall, things like that. Like things happen in, you know, during the story, but things also happen before the story.
Mm-hmm. And they get kind of these epithet names. That they are referred to. Yes. And also like Godwin is, you know, the firstborn and kind of the most loved of America, you know, and, it's kind of a real, it mixes in with Norse stuff as well. Like this is a little bit like the death of Baldur in a sense, insofar as it's an event that kind of presages, presages kind of a Ragnarok. Yeah.
Insofar as it's a real dick slap.
Yeah, it's a real
Black Knives is a real dick slap. Fucked up little man. Do you remember the real dick slap of the Night of Black Knives?
Oh man.
What a bummer it was.
But Godwin's dying, and you know, the shattering started this succession war, which wasn't just the breaking
called
of
the shattering.
It's confusing.
Yeah. The Elden Ring shattered, and the shattering caused the shattering, which is a proper noun which describes a succession war.
Yes. So the demigod children of Marika's line claimed the shards of the Elden Ring, but were not able to contain its power. So again, we get like these parallels to the, parts of the souls of the great soul, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we get shots of the various demigods kind of warped and ruined by their power. What's important is we don't really like get a bunch of names of these folks here.
No.
We just like the roll call ends up being for our peers. Also, yeah. It's important to say, like, demigod doesn't necessarily imply that you are directly descended from the blood of Merica, even just being, they're like, married children. In and associated. Yeah. Which is real weird.
What a weird and, like, awesome and mundane, like, figuring out the lineage of this felt really cool to me, that there were stepchildren.
Yep.
For some reason. Like, it's so, I mean, the reason why this happened, and this is an old theme, right, is... Mm-hmm. There's a lore description. Like every Souls game, I feel like, has an item description that encapsulates the entire game.
Yeah.
You know? So you have the fading ember in Dark Souls 2, which talks about the ember's fading, and it hasn't quite, and maybe never will fade away. Maybe that's its natural state.
Yeah.
There's one in this one where it's like the shattering occurred because even though they were gods, they were as petty as human. That's the fly in the ointment. And I'm like, man, that's perfect.
Love that. Like, I have not read that item description yet. I haven't gotten there, but I love that that's the fly in the ointment, just as an understatement, but also as kind of a return almost to that Dark Souls 2 style, like kind of sardonic authorial voice being put on these, you know, like taking a little bit of the dispassionate, detached narrator kind of tone away from it. That's the fly in the ointment. That's so good.
It's really great. It's my favorite item description of the game. And it is. It is the fly in the ointment. These people kind of suck. These shitty stepkids. we are going to meet all these people. They're just not introduced, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
The shattering ruined the land. And just like absolutely fucked everything up. And the greater will abandoned the world. The greater will is this even greater force, bigger than the Erd Tree. Bigger than America, bigger than the fingers. Mm-hmm. That is as far as we know, God.
Yes.
In this. There's more to it. We'll find out more as we go. But as far as we can tell, the greater will is a stand-in for the big God, the big cheese.
Yeah. And like if this is like a trinity, then America would be the mother, like the demigods would be the sons, and then the greater will would be like the Holy Spirit, right?
Yeah.
As the church is set up, you know, at that we kind of see it first, right? People talk about the greater will. It is a thing that is on people's lips. At around this point, after describing the shattering and how it has torn the land apart, this is where we get the voice getting like exultant and desperate, you know, not just bemoaning what has happened, but like issuing a call to action for the tarnished, saying, "Oh, arise now, ye tarnished, ye dead who yet live." The call of long lost grace speaks to us all. And that actually contains a lot about what the tarnished are.
Yeah. This is why we come back.
Yes.
This little bit of these motes of grace are granted to us to bring us back. It is the diegetic reason why we come back to life. Mm-hmm. And the diegetic reason why these people, these tarnished who were exiled from the lands between, come back.
Yes.
Don't call it a comeback. y'all forgot about there. So we have this little mode of grace, which is what is motivating us here. Grace is also a vague noun in this. Grace is like energy from the greater will.
Yeah.
Kind of holy power.
Yes.
You know? And we get this roll call of our peers. As we mentioned, these are people who have come back.
Right.
Generally. So we get a Horalu, a chieftain of the Badlands. And we get a still shot of this man having died at this point. Not all of these people have come back to life. Some of them have come back to life. Some of them were alive at the time they came back.
Yes. Yeah. But he's been pierced by arrows and he's standing next to this kind of like huge leonine beast. We're going to fight a few of those things. Again, I love how much stuff is introduced that you just straight up see.
And those things suck.
Yeah, I know.
They need to settle down.
They really do.
Don't tie a sword to a cat.
Like, why would you go and do that? They're already mostly knives.
Yeah, don't tape a spear to the back of pocket and then call it a day.
Oh man. The next one is the ever brilliant Gold Mask. Who is this like the skeletal figure, just completely emaciated, kind of sprawled, almost like crawling across the floor, wearing this kind of baroque looking sun mask. He looks very foreboding, like it just like of these, aside from the Dung Eater, he's the one who most reads as like, ah, it's bad news.
He's actually a really good guy.
Yes. Yeah.
There's only a couple purely good people mm-hmm. in this game because it's a FromSoft game. Like, we're not going to be coy boys about the fact that things that are presented as good are actually bad.
Yeah.
Because we assume that you've played video games and you've played FromSoft games.
You know how stories work, that an expectation is set up and then is subverted in order to create drama. Yeah.
Gold Mask is actually, so following Gold Mask quest line, which I didn't do my first run through, but I'm doing this run through, even though I'm not doing like a Vaith build, mm-hmm. Is reveals tons of backstory. Like, yeah. This is a big way to learn about America.
Nice.
So recommended.
Yeah.
Fia, the deathbed companion. So this is this very radiant looking woman lying with this mummified king in this chamber full of skulls. Also a very important character we're mm-hmm. going to run into and do her quest. We're not going to meet her for a while.
No. We're going to also very controversial whether or not you should hug her. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about the hug.
Yeah. And then this is one that made me blurt laugh just because, like, yep. how much can you own somebody? It's kind of like, like we have Blighttown and then just they decided to one up it by making it just the gutter.
Yeah.
You know, here we get the loathsome dung eater. Yeah, the dung eater. Yeah,
this guy. Yep, eat shit. This like bloaty man. He's wearing his armor is actually really interesting. Mm-hmm. The stuff that it looks like he's covering these bumps, but this is armor with horns.
Yeah.
Cut down. And he's being hung.
Yeah.
On a gallows. Nobody likes this guy. We'll also meet him eventually. Sir Gideon Ofnir, the all-knowing. Obviously an Odin figure. Mm-hmm. This decorated king lying in a burial vault full of riches. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then our character
just kind of lying down in the middle of nowhere, just in this foggy vault. The moat just drifts down and lands on the hand and brings it back to life. This is us. You know, we're being listed alongside these legendary figures, but that is undercut right away, you know, and last a tarnished of no renown. And this is where we get up and, you know, kind of look, off of the edge of this large, you know, large cliff to a huge line of lights that is illuminating the sky. You know, just this grace coming back to the world.
Yeah. It's our fucked up little man.
Yeah. So the guidance of grace is going to, you know, take us, is going to guide us to the Elden Ring and become, you know, have us become the new Elden Lord, kind of setting us up alongside these peers as the people who will succeed where the direct spawn of America failed and retake up the race. Yeah.
it's basically this big scavenger hunt
mm-hmm.
to see which of these fucked up little dudes can claim the title.
Yeah.
American tarnished warrior.
Yeah. So, just trying to run through sends. Nobody's ever completed it.
Yeah. That's what the fringe folk hero's grave.
That's what it is.
American tarnished warrior.
Oh my gosh! And we wake up.
American.
We are. We're in this empty, decrepit church. This is the Chapel of Anticipation. Obviously, anticipation, yes, we are at the beginning, but there is a specific religious definition for anticipation. Basically, the idea, you know, not just that you believe that something holy is real, but you act and speak as though you expect it to have an impact in the real world, right?
Yes.
So
practical.
Yes. So it just, you pray knowing that something is going to happen on the other side of that. And it's pretty true. You are animated by grace here to go and make an effect here in the lands between. So I like that as a name for something to begin this game.
Yeah. This is not your tutorial zone.
No.
Unusually for From. This is just a little zone to give you a couple of things and fuck you up. You know, we get our message thing, the tarnished wizened finger, which allows us to write messages and everything. If you pre-ordered, you get the ring gesture.
Mm-hmm.
And you step out of this church into this kind of like beautiful foggy nighttime. You get to see Stormvale mm-hmm. from where you're at under the Erdtree. It's a beautiful view. Really amazing. No stars in the sky. Just that really, really great. Like, this will be your first major goal is getting a Stormvale.
Yeah.
You won't do it for a while, but I love it being the first thing you see when you leave.
Yeah. I also love that it's nighttime here. And this feels almost like a special, like I need to come back here at night. It feels almost like it's a special lighting condition, because I didn't realize that I was just off of the coast of Limgrave here. I had no idea. Like I didn't check didn't even think to check the map. This felt like it was like far disconnected from everything. And when I ultimately stumbled back here, I was like, oh shit, that's the island I was trying to get to.
Same. Like it has that, I think Will described it, but that there's a beautiful feeling that happens in Elden Ring where there's an area you've been trying to get to for a really long time and you finally stumble upon it.
Yeah.
There's no sights of grace here. So I don't know how to look at this in nighttime and how to make it nighttime,
I guess.
When you get here. I'm not trying to pour water on you, but I don't know. I would like to see that as well, but I don't know how to do it.
I mean, you could just rest at the grace outside of those belfries and wait until shortly before nighttime and then take the warp to get over here.
I just wonder if it changes it, because when you go through the warps to other places, like the lighting condition when you warp to the far end game area from there is not dependent on things.
Don't know.
So, and that could be a property of that area.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Who knows?
But just it looks and feels otherworldly. Like this does not feel like it is a part of the world, especially after you get back above ground after the tutorial.
Yeah. You wander down. There's not a whole lot to do. Until you wander into this boss arena. It's this courtyard with a gigantic statue of America. We're going to see a lot of these. And a monster jumps down to attack us. This is a boss, the Grafted Scion. This is this creature with multiple arms, kind of this spider man.
Imagine, if you will, a man who is something like a spider hands.
Is he strong? Listen, bud.
roughly how big a web? No, this thing. Yeah. I laughed out loud when I saw this because it does look kind of goofy. It is a monster made entirely out of arms, many of them holding swords and shields and stuff. But it is like meant to be as intimidating as possible. I've started a couple times and tried making progress on taking this guy out. Never done it at the start.
The trick is arrows. You don't want to be close to him because he just one or two shots you. So you just keep your distance and plink him down.
Yeah.
And that will more or less do it. It's not really worth it. You get some equipment that is not bad, but you won't be able to equip it for a very long time.
Right.
Because of stat requirements. Yeah. But I'm glad they gave a reward back for doing that. Cut to or think about Sekiro or Dark Souls 3 when you would do such a thing and nothing would happen.
Right.
Or not Dark Souls 3. Dark Souls 3 doesn't have one. You invite Udex, but you know what I mean.
Yes. Yeah. So the reason the name of this thing is meaningful, like the process of grafting is like how it's made. All of those parts used to be people's arms.
Oh yeah.
Presumably there's somebody or something at the middle of this that those are grafted to.
Yeah. We're going to learn about that, the provenance.
Yeah.
Those free range arms a bit later. You can beat him or not. It doesn't matter, but you do have to die.
Yes.
To start the game, to teleport off. When you die, you were teleported to an area called the Stranded Graveyard. I wake up in blackness, and this is a cutscene. We hear a splash. Our character is lying face down in the shallow pool of water, surrounded by all these corpses, and a horse walks up, kind of sniffs you.
And we see it's a strange horse. It's got these four horns on it. It's standing. It's got fog around his feet, and we hear a woman's voice saying, don't worry, Torin, fortune is on his side. We found him here after all. I'm just not realizing how funny it is that Grace animates us and then we immediately eat shit and have to be revived.
Oh yeah. Grace, it's got to be really annoying for Grace.
I know, right?
Being reincarnated somebody can stay alive for 5 fucking minutes.
But the woman gets down. We can't see her face because of this kind of cowl she's wearing. She's got a hood over her, but she says one of his kind is sure to seek the Elden Ring, even if it does violate the Golden Order. Again, super important stuff laid out here. We are rule breakers at this point.
Yeah. One set of rules, right? Oh. Like we are being encouraged. We're given this grace to go seek the Elden Ring as a thing. The way that we're going to have to do this is not kosher with the Golden Order, which is just basically the law of the land religiously.
Yes.
You know, in this zone, the people who worship America, they have this thing called the Golden Order. Mm-hmm. And it's what was broken with the Shattering.
Yes.
You know, and that's why there's this war and the area, the world is in such dire straits.
Yeah. And that's why there's a tree sentinel outside of this place.
Yeah. Yeah. Golden Order got fucked up. Yeah. So, this character, we're going to meet her a little bit later and we'll talk about her this episode.
Yeah.
For now, we just wake up though. That character is gone. We have our, Estus. It's called a Flask of Crimson Tears. This works just like Estus.
Yes. Yeah. And you can transfer stuff around, heal HP, heal FP. It is a good system and I'm happy that they brought it back.
It's better than the system, I think, in Dark Souls 3 because there's reasons to use FP.
I know, right?
I'm playing a sorcerer on my second run through, which one is a blast. Mm-hmm. Like the sorcery stuff in this game is really cool. Two, it's tied into like some of the cool story shit.
Yeah.
That you can do. And then three, like it's actually a choice.
Yes.
In Dark Souls 3, I never wanted to have mono potions because weapon art sucked and spells sucked.
Yeah.
Here, like I'm basically rocking 50-50 at any given time, and it makes sense. It's balanced well for it.
Yeah. No, I can't. It's hard for me to imagine not playing as some kind of caster actually in this. My second character that I'm rolling to make notes for the show, I'm doing it as a faith caster. Because I want to fuck around with that because there were lots of good spells that I wanted to see. So I am also doing it 50-50.
If this game's real long, I don't know when I'll have a third playthrough in me, but when eventually I do, I'm going to play through as an insanity priest. Cause that's my shit.
Yeah. So, seems effective too.
Everything's effective. My ability is the name of the game.
Yeah. We also have an item in our inventory called the Memory of Grace. This is kind of like the dark sign. This is what you activate in order to lose your runes and go back to the most recent checkpoint that you rested at. It's the memory of the first grace, which once guided, bygone, tarnished to the lands between. It is merely a cycle. Stand before the Elden Ring, become the Elden Lord. So our little mission is just put right here into this thing that is always in our inventory.
What I like, so it tells you this, but one of the things, so when I first got this and read it, I was worried.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I like about Elden Ring in the FromSoft catalog is it is far less of a cycle.
Yes.
Than previous ones. Like there is not that sense of, you know, Dark Souls 2 ending, like it doesn't really matter what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the endings in this feel impactful. Like the new status quo you're setting up does not feel like, oh, it's just all going to happen again.
Yeah.
You know, because characters are dead. Like people go away. You know, whatever the new thing that happened, it's like all Eldia ending. Mm-hmm. It's all like, we're going to get out of the cycle.
Yes.
You know, this might be the only reference to a cycle that I've read.
Yeah.
In this.
Outside of just the symbolism inherent to the ring itself. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And even that ring is a fucked up ring. Like it's not just a ring. It's this complicated, many, you know, looping circles overlapping and stuff.
Yeah. So there are two ways forward from here, just in this pit where we woke up. We could go upward to the surface, and a lot of people just did this because why would you jump into a pit? Like, I don't want to die immediately. I just died.
Tells it to you. Well,
the guy does. I think the guy was added in a patch. I don't remember the guy being there. Okay. All right. Yeah.
I think people just didn't talk to him because he's a ghost.
Oh yeah, don't want to get spooked. Yeah, there's a guy sitting. That's a spirit sitting in a chair at the edge of this pit, saying, "Hey, take the plunge and remember thy warrior's blood." So
this is actually, so this guy drew a lot of heat because you could accidentally skip it.
Yes,
this is the tutorial, and it's pretty clever. Like it does let you just skip the tutorial if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
There are not appreciable rewards for it.
Right. You get a gesture.
You get a gesture and a paltry amount of runes.
Yeah.
So if you're on your second playthrough, feel comfortable skipping it.
Yeah. I do like that they made it into a literal pro tip pit.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a pit full of pro tips. You go down there, you fight against these, what we have is our equivalent basic hollows in this. These are kind of ruined nobles. So they're these zombies more or less dressed up in... you know, finery, like tattered finery. It's a really striking image as opposed to the kind of wretches.
Yeah.
You know, that you would have in the previous games.
Yeah. It's especially kind of noteworthy here in Limgrave too, because this is a place that is absolutely fallen from what it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of luxury and whatnot, Godric has not been a good ruler.
No.
Yeah. And we get our you know, second boss fight here. And I really, really love this Soldier of Godric fight, because it is a kind of highlighting, oh, bosses aren't necessarily always going to be these gigantic, you know, enemies that take forever to kill. Sometimes in this game, the language of a boss fight, you know, music and a name and a health bar is going to be applied to these, you know, encounters that you're not really used to. Yeah, mini bosses that are kind of codified here. Our bosses, because of where they take place in a level, not so much because of, like, you know, they're these bespoke gigantic creatures with their own movesets and stuff.
Yeah, it's something that From has been doing for a while. Mm-hmm. It's a thing that I, you know, they started doing in Dark Souls 2, but they set the expectation better.
Yeah.
In this game, through this. So in Dark Souls 2, you play through it and bosses act like bosses for the whole game. And then you run into Covetous Demon and you're like, that was fucking it. You know, like, he's got attacks and I'll never get hit by him because he's so easy.
Yeah.
Here, the game is saying that a boss means a lot of different things, and it's a nonlinear game. We don't know how powerful you are. And more importantly, we don't know how experienced you are.
Yeah.
At stuff. When they set out to make this game and Miyazaki was like, more people will finish this, I think that it was an intentional thing. You know, they could not have anticipated that it would be as popular.
I don't think anybody did.
As it was.
Yeah.
No, nobody did. But they also, they allowed for the idea that people who had not made a career out of playing these games would still play.
Yeah.
So this guy who is nothing to us, you know, I could still imagine somebody who's just playing a FromSoft game for the first time and still having a hard time with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to the wiki, there are strategies on how to beat him.
Yeah.
Right. And to me, it's like, it's simpler than anything. Mm-hmm. But if I was totally new to this type of game, maybe he'd be real tough.
Yeah.
And maybe that would be true of the Beast Man of Ferrum Zula, or, you know, any of these like very early easy bosses.
Yeah.
You know, I get a little spike of annoyance every time I beat one of them. And then somebody puts out a soapstone message. That's like, why is it always easy foe? Or why is it always weak foe? And I'm like, it's not always.
Yep.
You know, like, go fight somebody hard. Like, there's plenty of extremely hard bosses in this game.
Yes.
You know,
you know, and if it was easy, it didn't take up very much of your time. So you can move along.
Yeah. And you still got to see a cool critter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, appreciate something other than just a move set.
Yeah.
Like just a wireframe of dodge timings, you know?
Yeah. Well, this guy, the Soldier of Godric as well, is a really good tutorial for the guard counters, because he's wielding a big sword, but he's not really that good at it. And part of managing these guard counters, you know, you can get hit in the middle of trying to fire one of these off, right? So you don't want to fire it in the middle of somebody's combos. This guy doesn't really combo that much. He's got like his lunge and his leap, and that's about it. So he leaves these really wide windows open for you to use this mechanic that is definitely new to you if you're just sitting down to Elden Ring. But it is wide open for you to actually get it in and successfully see how much more damage it does compared to just a regular hit.
Yeah. The soapstone tutorial message for it is right outside the boss arena.
Yes.
You know, once you get through him, we end up above the crypt. This also communicates something about how level design is going to work in this. A lot of times they just teleport you out, but the idea that you can get back to the beginning, you know, you're not going to have to backtrack is portrayed here. You get your strength gesture. And then we walk out into this crypt that is no longer a cave. So this cave is connected to a crypt. This is more constructed, you know, fixtures and the like. There's a site of grace here. We talked about those in the last episode. These are bonfires, essentially. You can do all the stuff you want to do at them, which is a huge improvement.
Yeah. Not level up yet, though. We do need to meet somebody, for we are maidenless. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy, are we. There's also a fog gate here. If you took the imp key here, you can go into the stone sword key. You can go into this.
Yeah.
It's real hard.
Very.
For where you're at now. You do get some really good items. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about it later since we're doing West Lindgrave dungeons.
Yes.
But this is kind of a little trap.
Yeah. You don't want to go in here because you're going to get steamrolled quite literally.
We take an elevator up and open this gigantic metal door to get our first view of the game proper of Lindgrave. Lindgrave is absolutely beautiful.
Love it.
Breathtaking area. I mentioned it in the first impressions thing, but it looks like a post-apocalyptic heaven.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's so beautiful, but there's just ruins about and skulls and the like.
It's
I don't want to do it yet, but we probably will talk about it once I'm confident that you've gotten there, Cole.
Mm-hmm.
The story behind what these ruins, mm-hmm. like these like bits of Colosseum and stuff that are on the ground,
yeah,
is so fucking cool. And you don't find out for a long time.
Yeah.
But there's a story there. It's not just it looks cool.
Right. It actually, like, these used to be something. Yes. Yeah. So what I love about Lindgrave is, like, yes, in the macro, like, as you're getting, you know, it's so much to soak in, right? Like, this is just a gigantic open vista for you. In the macro, it is incredibly beautiful. But, like, once you start getting close and, like, down into the hills, you can see how fucked up everything is. At a high level of zoom, such as the entire place is dotted with crucifixions.
Yeah. This very specific crucifixion, which we've seen before, mm-hmm. when in the opening cutscene when they showed Merica, Merica is hanging on one of these. It is this like kind of smiley face crucifixion.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what if the top was kind of a half a circle?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the symbols everywhere, sometimes there are people on them. Sometimes they're just crosses.
Yes.
That are up, basically. But you get the sense this is what this land has instead of crosses as like a holy symbol.
Yeah. But yeah, we can see Stormvale Castle up on this cliff, over to the left. The Erd Tree is right. It's really hard to quantify in words exactly how massive this Erd Tree is. Even mm-hmm. from this far away, it's really hard to look up and see the top of it.
Yeah. You basically can't.
Yes.
And you can open up the map at this point and the map looks really manageable and they do a trip, which we'll talk about later as well.
Liars.
There is a site of grace right in front of you. It wants you to go right there. And we see these little moats leading to it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the guidance of grace. This is something that we can still see, which is pretty special.
Yes.
You know, the equivalent in this world of kind of going hollow is no longer being able to see the guidance of grace.
Yeah.
And a lot of characters will draw attention to the fact that they, you know, you can see it and they can't. We can still see it for the whole game.
Yeah.
It's useful. It leads you towards bonfires, but it also has a story reason.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why we're here is we're introduced to a character. There's a character standing right next to this that we are meant to talk to.
Yes. This is White-Faced Vare. And he's posted up. He's just waiting to see who comes out of this, who comes out of this very particular vault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's, I love this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's real creepy looking.
He's that goes against his kind of familiar and kind of friendly demeanor too. He's got like a white mask on. Kind of looks like
he looks like the leper in Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah,
a lot. I love the dialogue as well. Like where he's like, "Oh, tarnished, are you? Come to seek the Elden Ring? There's no shame in it." Like, there's no shame in it. He also, there's a great thing here where he talks to you. He kind of explains what's going on.
You know?
To you. In the network test version, he said, "You're going to go die in a ditch."
Yay!
And they cut it out. I didn't play the network test because I didn't want to spoil it for myself, but I can't believe they had that line in there and they cut it out. he says you'll die in obscurity.
Yes.
But it used to be like, you're maidenless and you'll go die in a ditch.
Yeah.
Just incredible stuff.
I
fucked up little man.
I like how he, how he's kind of a stand-in for the Crestfallen. You know, previous Souls mm-hmm. games have kind of always had this in the starting area, this one guy who is just completely depressed. He's arrived before you and has been stymied basically at every turn. and kept from getting any success, and is there kind of to set the tone, but also for you, somebody for you to prove wrong by going and mm-hmm. doing stuff. And this articulates in different ways. Sometimes he goes crazy from it and kills you. Sometimes he ends up bucking up, things like that. Vare here, everything about him is so arch, because he has an agenda, and like he is here, like I'm not even sure, like with this dialogue saying, oh, you're maidenless, you know, you don't have an invitation to the Round Table Hold, you don't have any power of runes, like he's saying, like, yeah, you have zero chance, you know, because of how you've been set up for failure.
Yes. We don't find out. So Vare is working for one of the major factions, like one of the demigods.
Yes.
We don't find out the specifics of that until later. Like, it's not a spoiler to say this guy has ulterior motives.
Yeah.
Because of course he does. He has the fucked up laugh, but what's interesting about this, like once you know that reveal, is how, something that is a pet theme of FromSoft and is really huge in this game is being a pawn.
Yeah.
Of greater forces. And it's pawns on pawns on pawns.
Oh yeah.
You know, like the pawns have chess masters, and those chess masters are pawns in turn. Mm-hmm. And this is why, it's like a pyramid scheme actually.
Yeah,
like almost exactly.
Yeah.
And White Fist Vare is trying to recruit you to sell Fingerway or whatever. While also being invested in you getting a little bit further.
Yes.
In things, so he wants to help you out. We don't know what it's like to be maidenless or what maidenless means yet.
Yeah.
But eventually we will learn that the Tarnished, if they're going to go and become the Elden Lord, have a maiden, who not only, acts as their, maiden in black, who gives them level ups, but is also really instrumental, in terms of, what happens, like the process of becoming the Elden Lord,
the apotheosis that is waiting for you at the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
We do not have that.
No.
However, he says, like, there's a little bit of hope because you still see that guidance of grace.
Yeah.
That
is that is something for you here. If you follow that, it's probably going to lead you up to Castle Stormvale on that cliff. Yeah, that cliff over there, home of the decrepit demigod Godric the Grafted. I love how much people nag Godric.
There are so many shitheads in this game.
Uh-huh.
Like the people talk about Godric, or people talk about Shabriri, or the Dung Eater. Like in IM descriptions and the way people talk about it, they're just like, ugh, that fucking guy.
This clown.
Just a shitty, shitty demigod. So we eventually will get, an invite to the Round Table Hold. But he's kind of asking, leading you on, kind of asking what you think about it.
Yeah.
At this point, it has fallen from its former glory, but it still has its perks. It's still good to be there.
Yeah.
Why not take your place at the Round Table Hold? You may as well at this point. It's not contrary to his goals for you.
No, no.
It will help you achieve what you're doing, even if what he wants you to do is not, just... Yeah. Right the table.
Yeah. He also wants us to see for ourselves kind of the state of things.
Yes.
So that it can kind of feel like we're coming to our own conclusion about what's going on. And if we want to kind of follow the party line on how things go. But he kind of gives us our next step. He says, hey, come talk to me when you get your grand rune. Godric has it, but be careful. He's found his new toy to graft. Again, just all this talk of grafting and what his toy is real cool.
It's great. Yeah. Just incredible stuff.
Yeah.
Var is going to be important later.
Yes.
There's some stuff in the immediate that he talks about. And this is one of those things we talked about at the beginning of the episode. Like, this would happen naturally in a couple episodes from now, but it doesn't make sense to try to keep track of it.
Right.
So we mentioned before, and you can, I think you can have mention of it, already, even though you don't meet them, something called the Two Fingers.
Yeah.
We'll save the reveal for what they look like, but they're emissaries of the Greater Will.
Yes.
Basically, they are, kind of conduits.
Right.
And Var is really interested after you meet them. You can talk to him and he says, like, hey, maybe it's just me, but for me, it feels like something was a little bit off with those guys.
Yeah, you know, just maybe you can help me put it into words. Like, what kind of vibe did you catch off them things?
If you say they're great, he's like, great, you passed my test. He doesn't literally say that. There's a character later that literally does that, and it's very funny. But he basically goes, as you would. You know,
okay, yeah.
That's proper.
Nerd.
You know, but nerd. But if you say, like, yeah, they seemed a little bit off, he flips out. He's just like, yeah, they are.
Oh, man. Finally, we can talk shit about these fingers.
Yeah, we have much to discuss. It's like in review when Forrest McNeil gets recruited by the racist.
You know? Wait a minute, I thought you liked Hitler.
Yeah. Well, I did until he started in on the Obama shit. Yeah. They say we can't dance. Tell me I can't dance. So he wants to recruit you into his Lord's service.
Yes.
He is against the fingers, the Golden Order. This current status quo. Mm-hmm. They're corrupted. They give us horrible advice, and they're basically using the tarnished. And he's not wrong.
Nope.
You know, like those are all things that are true. It doesn't necessarily mean that we should join him in basically what is the PvP.
Right.
Covenant. He finds a way to let us invade people and become what's known as a bloody finger, working for one of those demigods who we haven't met yet.
Yes. Yeah. And we can save, do we want to save the reveal of what he is?
Yeah. We'll talk about him when we get there, but just know. So to explain VAR, that's VAR's thing. He's recruiting people for an MLM, but a different MLM.
an MLM that is, a little bit more directly in the business of making people miserable.
Yes. The way that you get the item for the unlimited invasions is he cuts off your finger.
Uh-huh.
I love it so much. It's such a great, and he's so slimy about it. Like, don't wince, you know, like it's so good.
Yeah.
For now though, he's just there to tell you to go to Stormvale and go and seek the, follow the guidance of grace. They also do a thing here, which I wish they did a lot more.
Yeah.
Which is after he disappears from this area, he leaves a message saying where to find him.
Yeah.
Every character should do this.
Mm-hmm. This was much more useful.
It's a really good idea.
This was much more useful before the NPC markers were added.
Yeah. Well, even then, though, like, sometimes it tells you where to look.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, the maps really, and it diegetically makes sense.
It does. Yeah.
Like, I like it a lot more than I like the idea of markers.
Yeah.
You know, I would have preferred this for everyone.
Mm-hmm. But he says, like, yeah, I'll be at this church up in Liurnia. You know, just come and meet me, you know. But we're here. Like, we've got the whole wide world in front of us. Like, we can look back up at the stranded grave, kind of see the head of the mausoleum here. And it is this, it is topped by this huge statue of this cloaked and hooded figure holding up this deceased shrouded woman. Again, kind of in this, it's kind of the same shape as the crucifixions or the pose of Merica. You know, the person arm stretch upwards. And then in this case, the body of the woman that's being held forming the arc. That is there.
Yeah. The countryside has all these crucifixions, as we mentioned. There are these ruins that are embedded on these hills. Pay attention to the architecture of these.
Yeah.
And just keep that in your back pocket for a very cool late game thing.
Yeah. I think I'm just about to where you're going to be talking about. I'm curious. Yeah.
It's really neat.
Yeah.
And then there are critters.
There's wildlife. I love how alive this place feels.
Mm-hmm. In their own little bespoke guys.
Uh-huh.
You know, like they're these little sheep things, and then they do sonic rolls.
Yep.
fully 30% of the things in this game can roll around like Sonic.
I love it so much.
It's the first time one of the giants did it, one of the trolls did it, I lost my fucking shit. Like, the experience of me playing this game was seeing an enemy do a real dorky little animation and clapping like a circus seal, like in my apartment alone.
Yeah.
Like, just, excuse me? Like, you're gonna roll away from me, little weirdo?
And you know, just maybe about like 15% of the time it would be a roll away, or no, most of the time it'd be a roll away, but like about 15% of the time that roll turns into to an attack, like directly into you.
The music kicks up, like the scare, like the intense music kicks up because this little sheep is gonna come and nuzzle you to death. so happy, into it.
Yeah, no, I exactly the same. You know, last episode when we were talking about the fucked up little guys, the move animations on some of these critters and some of these enemies, again, From has figured out that cartwheeling is the best way that something can move. It's real Kingsfield energy. Like, if you like dorky movement and attack animations, boy, have I got a series for you.
Yeah. It's also, it ties into, we can hunt these guys for their necks and their pieces of meat and stuff for crafting. I feel bad doing it, but every once in a while on my horse, I'll just sport.
Yeah.
Have a dude.
You need some thin bones for your arrows. Like, it's just got to happen.
Yeah. And we have the ambient music here, which is very beautiful. I love the music in this game.
Yeah.
Just very pretty.
It's plaintive strings.
There's a boss out here. That we mentioned, this field boss, this tree sentinel. This is hard. Like, you're really not meant to fight him.
Yeah.
Here, he's very tough. But you can, and we're going to talk about him. He's a boss here. And you can, like, after you've done some level ups.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's tricky, but he's not impossible.
Yeah. You also might here. Find, you know, like, he is on horseback, and you have not gotten Torrent yet. Yes. Sometimes mounted enemies are easier to fight on foot because you can dodge out of the way. But, you know, depending on your particular combat aptitude and the weapon you have, sometimes being on horseback alongside him will make it easier to do hit and run and kind of stay a little bit more safe. So that is also something. I think the fact that he is so difficult here is, yes, telling you that field bosses are a thing. But also, I think it's a way to get you off of the path. And get you kind of like over into the sides of things, you know, so that you can see that there is incident off of the road, possibly, because he's like moving up and down the road between the stranded grave and the church where you're headed to.
Yeah, and that kind of teaches you a little bit about stealth. It teaches you that you can run away.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have, like, these enemies will de-aggro, and just the boss health bar will just go away if you get far enough away.
Yeah.
In terms of a fight, later this guy becomes like a guy that you're going to run into.
Yeah.
You know, and they reuse this boss fight several times. And it makes sense because there's not a whole lot to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's really heavily armored. He does these sweeping strikes from on top of his horse. Shield slams. He makes his horse attack. Mm-hmm. Do these kind of jump strikes at you.
Yeah.
And he just hits really, really hard for this point in the game.
Yeah, no. Depending on your starting class, it might be most or maybe all of your HP.
What these guys are, so tree sentinels are this elite order of knights that are the living rampart of the Erd Tree. They are set out to protect the Erd Tree at all cost. He's here to stop Tarnished to come out of this grave from their mission.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out why. Later.
Much later.
And why somebody who protects the Erd Tree would want to stop Tarnished from getting there.
Yeah. Or at least why they think they ought to do it.
Yeah. So he is there to stop you.
Yeah.
You know, just rounding up dudes.
So you want to skirt him. You know, you want to go off road, get into some of these bushes, maybe get up and close with some of those sheep or some of those penguins. Get to kind of the first and nearest of the landmarks on the horizon here, this ruined church, the Church of Ella.
Yes, Ella. I do not know who Ella is.
No,
there are a lot of around. Churches and temples of, and then a name that does not appear in the lore.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There are many of these. Churches are important. They always have a site of grace.
Mm-hmm.
And ones other than this one typically will have an upgrade for your flasks.
Yes.
So the amount that they heal. This one doesn't.
Right.
And it has a weird little Band-Aid crafting table. later you're going to get access to a real blacksmith, a couple of them. But for now, you can do minor upgrades.
Yeah.
Here at this church.
Yeah. The place is empty. There's not really even an altar, but there is a squatter. We meet our first nomad merchant, Kale. who's just kind of here warming his toes by the fire. He's got his cool little banjo. And he sees that we're tarnished, but because we're not here to, you know, kill him, he's willing to do some business for us.
Yeah. This is a, he's part of a race of nomadic merchants. Mm-hmm. They're going to be everywhere.
Yep.
There are a couple of things that are worth talking about with these dudes.
Yeah.
One, if you come upon one that's playing their instrument, get out your telescope. You find a telescope or buy a telescope pretty early on.
Allows
you
to zoom in. Kali tells him. Yeah.
Yeah, buy one. Look at his fingers while he's playing his instrument.
Mm-hmm.
They modeled it to look like he's actually playing the notes.
I love it.
It's incredible. Two, these guys have cut story around them that is still implied. So through talking to these dudes, you can see that they have a connection to something called the Frenzied Flame, which is essentially the Chaos Flame in this. It is one of the factions of this. The way you find that out is really obscure. And it's evil. It's through attacking them. And you're incentivized pretty hard to attack them. He says, don't do it. And he's like, you know, we have a saying like, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt, but show them no mercy if they fuck with you. But when you attack a merchant in this game, the way that they solved, kind of closing yourself off from things is making them drop a little thing called a bell bearing, which you can then give to another merchant and it gives them their stock.
Yes.
There's a version of this in Dark Souls 3, except you just found them.
Mm-hmm.
You found like the license for your merchant to sell stuff.
Yeah.
This is better.
Yeah.
It makes more sense. And that way you can consolidate all of the merchants.
Yeah. So you're not, you're not having to warp around. You just have one central place. And I don't know. I don't like killing these guys. It doesn't feel, they've been through enough.
Yeah, I don't like it, but I do it. You don't want to kill Kale yet because he's important to a quest line. But he is the only one, and the reason why this guy gets a name and like a bespoke kind of quest line is because he originally had a longer quest where you he sent you to find the rest of his tribe, the rest of his people, and you would find them slaughtered by a bunch of tarnished. Because of that connection to something called the Frenzied Flame, which we'll learn about later. And then you had to get revenge and everything, and then he eventually is like, you know, become the Lord of Frenzied Flame, you know, burn everything down. You know, the flip the table ending. Do the flip the table ending. All that stuff was cut. So now we just have a bunch of merchants who are worshippers of the Chaos Flame who do nothing else.
It's real implied from what I understand. Like the they're not worshippers of the flame by choice, is what I'm led to believe.
They send, they tell you about a village of Frenzied Flame people, and they tell you not to go there because people who are sick. Go there, which implies that they're quarantining their own. But ones who are wandering around, when you do attack them, some of them do use Frenzied Flame incantations. Not all of them, though. So it is a thing where it's like a contagion that affects some other people.
Love it.
You should also, they all sell notes. And these are really worth it. These will tell you obscure mechanics in the game.
Weak spots and ways to deal with annoying enemies and stuff.
Like early on when money's very tight, you're not going to want to do this, but they are worth reading. Like they tell you cool things.
Like this will tell you like, okay, Flask of Wondrous Physic. That sounds cool. It sounds wondrous to me. It actually gives directions to the church where you're going to find that customizable power up.
Which is really cool. Or like how to deal with a specific enemy, as you mentioned. Including one enemy that's like really, really hard to deal with otherwise. He gives you, he also says, hey, if you can take some advice, buy my crafting kit. This opens up the crafting system in the game. You just buy one. It's like $300 and then you can just craft for the rest of the game. He also, these characters will have some things that are unique to them. So they'll have recipe books for crafting and cracked pots. We talked about those last episode. You can get one as a starting gift. You want to get all of these you can.
It just raises the max number of throwables that you have, which one to use. And I forgot to use for a very long time.
And then as we mentioned, there's that anvil there. We'll come back to this church to meet another NPC a little bit later.
And we'll come back. We'll come back to talk to Kale in order to meet another NPC. This ends up being just like a little bit of a hotspot for us.
Yeah, just barely. Like, because we don't have the roundtable hold, which would be our firelink.
Right.
You know, this kind of acts as that for our opening excursions.
Yeah. So if we head north of the church, there are some foothills that are going to lead up to kind of the cliff below where Stormbell rests. And you're kind of like winding your way down these tiers of these fallen memorials, these fallen structures. And this is where we kind of see some of these fallen nobles. They're not just in these tombs, but they're kind of like out here toiling against the walls. Godric has kind of taken them and turned them into quarry workers.
The various miners. There are a lot of people pressed into service, especially in Limgrave.
Yes.
But basically everywhere as well.
Yeah.
Like, there are mines everywhere. There's also a statue. I can't remember the name right now, but this is actually a statue. These guide statues are a statue of a god.
Okay.
Like, not a character god who we've met, like a Children of America, but kind of a figure who shepherds the dead.
Gotcha.
And these, this is a really unexplained little mechanic. If you click on these, it will give you a little line and will point towards a crypt.
Yes.
A catacombs you can go into. Catacombs are one of the dungeon types in the game. And this is, tend to be hotbeds of those who live in death, which are different than tarnished or other undead.
Right. This is like, associated with a particular force. So it,
yes.
it might get confusing, but these zombies and these skeletons are different. But this one that we're going to go to is not necessarily kind of corrupted by these yet.
Yeah. They don't always have the death root, which we'll talk about when you run into that.
Yeah.
They tend to be the place where you can find it. You do find spirits there usually. So the spirits of the dead, these are there to guide them.
Yeah.
Because they can't return to the Erd Tree.
Nope.
So this points us towards the Stormhill Catacombs, this dungeon. These dungeons are not caves. They're constructed. You know, they look a little bit like chalice dungeons to me, in that they're very hallway focused.
Yeah.
Even though they do tend to have more going on
them
in terms of puzzle and stuff. And they tend to be protected by imps. Again, weird little guys, these little stone fuck ups,
little gargoyle kind of dudes. Yeah.
Yeah. There's different types, various gargs. They do ambushes. They stick to walls. They stick to ceilings. They pose as statues. They do it sometimes when you're fighting.
Yep.
I love it. So, like, no, I'm just a statue. Like, I'm not a Metal Gear Solid enemy. I'm not going to be fooled by this fucking box. Like, I just saw you moving. You know?
Oh, must have been rats. Yeah. If you play Dark Souls 3, the way these guys move and act is really similar to the thralls.
Oh, yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Those thief kind of guys. And when we say ambush, you know, it's not just that they act like statues. You get pretty acclimated to spotting those. And you can lock onto them when you're nearby. They love clinging high up on walls, kind of shortly above where your camera would normally stop. And so you think, okay, I'm going to attack this one. There's only like maybe one or two I can avoid aggroing it. And then before you know it, even though individually they move kind of, you know, they're not very fast, they will start crawling down from the walls and you are surrounded. So like here, it's a bit of a rude wake up call when they get around here, especially because they're attacking you with these like hook hatchets. And they build up bleed on you really fast. When this meter fills up, you take a fixed amount of damage. It's like a percentage based kind of thing. Hemorrhage. Yes. And it may take you down.
Yeah, they're tough. The trick is just to go carefully and then guard counter.
Yes.
Them. That will tend to put them in a riposte state.
Yeah.
There. This one has, this specific catacomb has a ghost. These NPCs, which don't get names, they're just around every once in a while to say a couple lines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of like a sign spinner in real life.
Can't
like,
they get a pull for that sign?
Tiny little lore bit. Yeah. So there's a ghost sitting in a chair, and if you talk to him, he's kind of giving you a little bit of the ecology of these catacombs. He says, you know, a proper death means returning to the Erd Tree, have patience until the time comes and the roots call to you. Bottom of each of these catacombs, as we're going to find, are the roots of the Erd Tree.
I love how literal that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the things they do with it, with the secret under Stormveil, right? Like the roots of the Erdtree are really interesting.
Yeah. It's good stuff. But of course this is a death denied to you because you are tarnished. No going back. The middle portion of this, kind of once you get down to the lower levels, this is flame traps, kind of these pillars at the end of hallways that will flood the halls with flame intermittently, do a lot of damage. You don't want to get hit by these. You want to time your dashes between the gouts of flame in order to get up close, and then they will recede into the floor if you give them a whack.
Yep. Early on, there's no real reason to, but astute players will realize you can ride them up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that ends up being a puzzle solution later. Also, this is communicating, I think, that even if you're playing a melee build, it's good to have a bow.
Yes.
You can do this from a distance with spells or a bow, and that ends up being safer.
Yeah.
You know, you can time it, but it's safer to hit them from afar. We get our first prattling pate carving here. These are little things that allow you to make a noise, you know, similar to the Goths. Little sayings,
the carvings, yeah,
in the carvings, yeah, in the previous games. The implication as to who Prattling Pate is fucking wild.
Yeah.
it's really surprising to me. This one just says hello. I think there are seven of these,
yeah,
that you can get,
including one that's important for a quest.
yeah it's very, very clever. Eventually, so the way these work is you always have to pull a lever, which opens up doors near the beginning. That's where it gets the most Chalice Dungeon DNA. And then, so that's by the entrance, it's right next to the Site of Grace, and then you fight a boss.
Yes.
This is the first boss I fought in the game, outside of the tutorial boss.
Right. And this is the Erdtree Burial Watchdog.
Looks like a cat. Its face is a cat.
Its face is a cat. It's got kind of like a Siamese or like a almost like a Sphinx cat tail, you know?
Yes.
Sphinx. But it's a dog. Like a description calls it a feline hound or something like that, as though that could be a thing.
Nonsense. This thing is great. It's so weird.
I love how awkward it is. Yeah.
It's really awkward. It
sits bolt upright and like moves around without real, like there's no arch to its back or anything.
It's an automaton.
Yeah.
You know, it's a living statue that moves like a statue. You know, it moves like an action figure.
Yeah.
As it moves around. And there, it's a cool fight. Like it's got a really nice early boss moveset, you know, to it. It's kind of signature move is these floating slams.
Yeah.
It does. It'll like float above you and then slam down doing a little AOE. And it can do this, I think, up to four times in a row.
Yeah. And it varies at every time. So it's hard to, you know, count it off.
Yeah. And you have to dodge it.
Yeah.
You can't really block it. It'll also do a thing where it'll stand up on its hind legs, like a little Roy Calhoun. And turn and then slam its hand down again in this very robotic motion, like one like action chop Michelangelo.
Yeah, he's
right. You know, it's press a button.
So it's a Rock'em Sock'em Grave Guardian. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The animations and stuff are just great on this dude. He can also breathe fire.
Yes. Breathe fire, and he's got this flaming tail. It's got this flame ball on the back of him that he will use to punish you. He'll give you a little slap if you attack him from the back.
Yep. So you have to be careful with him. And early on, like again, I think this guy's an appropriate challenge.
Yeah.
You know, for the first boss, very doable. Mm-hmm. And later they become just common enemies because they're pretty easy.
Yeah.
Not common, but they show up multiple times.
Yeah.
And you know, you eventually fight more than one of them. You know, this is reused, but as a first impression, it's real good.
Yeah. And what this is guarding, you know, this watchdog, we talked about these root bulbs, you know, the Erdtree kind of grows and has these roots here. And, you know, we may have noticed this place is a catacomb, but there have not been like shelves with bodies and stuff laid out. That's because the burial process is just kind of throwing the bodies on these roots, or maybe the bodies are drawn to the roots themselves. Like it is just kind of hanging out the side of the wall and they're just corpses just kind of embedded amid the tangles.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there are tombs and stuff. There are graves.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find as well, like in some of these, just on the walls.
Yeah.
There aren't shelves for bodies, but some people get put in a box. Some people get put in the roots.
Yeah.
You know?
Depends on if you bought the platinum plan.
Yeah, exactly. If you pay extra at the MLM at the center of the world. A reward for this dungeon is getting some spirit ashes. We haven't been introduced to the tutorial for this yet. We can't do anything with these.
Yeah.
Yeah, but these are the summons we talked about in the last episode. And these are not very good. You know?
No.
You get the Wandering Noble Ashes, which gives you a big crew of idiots.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of bodies on the field.
But they will almost immediately die. It's like summoning hollows or dreglings. Like, it's,
yeah.
You know, they're not going to run the distance for you.
A momentary distraction.
Yeah.
And then the Noble Sorcerer, who kind of provides some spell cover very slowly and is also very fragile.
Yeah.
I love that you get spirits from these catacombs. Like, you go down to where these bodies are, and you're basically getting an item to summon their soul.
Yeah.
You know, from where their body is interred.
I dig it. So when we come out of here, and very thankfully there, whenever you defeat a boss in one of these, there's a little warp that takes you back to the entrance. That's a nice little quality of life thing. When we get out, we can see that there's kind of an easy way to get down to the coast here, get down to this beach. And the pathway down is guarded by these trolls, by these gigantic enemies, that are reminiscent a little bit of the Dark Souls 2 giants to a degree.
They are explicitly not giants in this. They came up with a different word.
Yes.
Rather than just having everybody be a giant. This is going to be a recurring enemy. These are big guys with this rocky skin. Their stomach, like, they have like these external organs on their stomach. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And a lot of their attacks will cause them to fall over and expose their weak point, their face. They also, you can attack their feet until they fall over naturally.
Yeah.
These guys are interesting in the world, and they are really illustrative of different cultures in Elden Ring. So here in Limgrave, you know, they used to be allied with the giants. It wouldn't be a FromSoft game if there wasn't an ancient war with the giants. and I want to say we're going to find out more about that later, and like, we kind of will.
We'll only
find out a little bit.
Yeah, there's not a lot of history associated with it. It was like deliberately buried.
Yes. There's one important detail that happens with that, with Merica, but it's... That's basically it.
Yeah.
They betray the giants at this point, and then we're basically rewarded this by pressing them into service.
Yeah.
They are miners. They are soldiers. They are things like that. But the important thing is that's what they are here.
Yes.
When you run into them in other areas, in like Liurnia and Caria, they are given more respect. Like, they're given clothing.
Mm-hmm.
They're knights.
Yeah.
There. Like, Limgrave is so shitty. Such a horrible, racist, garbagey little place. Was it Godric the dickhead?
Yeah. Like, I mean, this will come up in the next episode, but like, these are the things that draw those gigantic funeral chariots. You know, they're not just yoked to them like oxen or whatever. They're pierced through the torso with gigantic hooks.
Yep. They're so resigned. I love when you kill one of them, the other one just takes a knee.
They're
like, I can't do it. You know?
Just welcomes it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's these things are great. Like, tons of quiet dignity to them. And also, they're real fucked up and weird looking. incredibly, not that hard, but very intimidating.
Yes.
The first time you see them.
Yeah.
And fighting multiple ones at the same time is difficult. Even though in this game, a cool thing that happens is big creatures can hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
So fighting multiple of them, if you get two of them overlapping, they'll kill each other, basically.
Yeah.
You make your way down to the beach, and we get our first, the equivalent of this game of crystal lizards are dung beetles, basically. And we find one that is invisible. We see little footprints going around in a loop. And this was something I did not know what to do.
Same.
With this. And I ended up having a note that just said, try attacking. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. You have to time it. It's a little difficult to time. A little pro tip for, and these get more complicated. This is a recurring thing.
Yeah.
A pro tip for these is, if you are a spellcaster, if you cast any AoE like fog, that will take care of these, and you can just kind of put it in the area.
Oh, okay.
And they'll run into it.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Makes these very easy.
Yeah. The dung beetles come in different kinds. There are these invisible ones that'll give you an ash of war. usually. Mm-hmm. But there are red ones that if you kill them, it will give you some refills on your Crimson Task of Tears. And there are blue ones mm-hmm. that will restore the FP charges on that. So this is a way to, like, in the middle of a long run, if you end up finding one of them, just kind of give yourself a few extra heals.
We didn't talk about it last episode, but also sometimes after killing a mob,
yeah,
you'll get some heals back. They don't want you to have to run to, you know, bonfire between every individual fight.
Yeah.
There are also dung beetles that will give you upgrade materials.
Mm-hmm.
They'll show up, and some that explode that are traps.
Yeah.
This one gives you an Ash of War. So it gives you, the equivalent of weapon arts.
Yeah. This beach has some interesting stuff on it. Up on the north, there is a camping warrior. Looks kind of like a Viking guy. This is a Kaiden warrior. He'll mm-hmm. attack you. He double hands this curved greatsword. When we kill him, we can pick up his gear. These Kaiden people are sellswords. They're mercenaries, specifically from the Snowy Mountains in the north. We're going to go up there. But Godric has kind of hired them as they've come south to be his muscle. They're really good at fighting on horseback. They're going to be, you know, if we find somebody on horseback, it's going to be one of these guys around here. And also,
in this area.
Yeah. Pretty, pretty shitty too. It's kind of implied that he's cooking and eating a dude.
You find his little barbecue section where he's at. You pick up the item here. And it's a strip of flesh.
Yeah.
The communication that's happening here with Limgrave is that Godric is hiring a lot of mercenaries.
Yes.
Like, he's not engendering a lot of loyalty.
No.
You know, because everybody doesn't like this shitty dude. He has to hire people.
Yeah.
To do this.
Yeah.
The beach also has our first land octopi and land octopus. These things are incredible. The way that they do octopi in this game is instead of putting, you know, the head and the beak and then having all the tentacles come out from it, all the tentacles are tied into a big knot basically mm-hmm. around it.
Yeah.
They're real hard to fight now, but when you actually can start fighting them, it's real cool. You cut off their arms, and at some point when they're on the back foot, they will eat their own arm to regain health.
Mm-hmm.
It's so incredibly good.
It's robbing arm to pay leg. I like it quite a bit. And again, just these big goofy guys and the little ones around them too. They've got little satellite babies around them.
Mm-hmm. And you get their ovaries when you kill them. Gross.
Yeah. Just really getting in there and doing that harvest.
Yeah. Mm. There's a merchant down here. This merchant's important because he sells you, the crafting recipe for poison antidotes.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have enough money to buy that in my first playthrough.
Okay.
So I forgot about him. I wasn't killing merchants.
Oh yeah. So poison was just something he had to live with.
Yeah. It was like 70 hours in and I was like, why haven't I found a fucking thing to cure poison? This is so stupid. and then I looked it up online. I was like, oh yeah, like, it's that guy.
Oh, that guy. They get the guy down under that rock.
Just hoping business shows up.
Well, actually not. Like, he's really he's really finicky.
Yeah.
Like, he's a merchant, you know. He's got to be out there glad handing people, but he's really just stuttery. He doesn't really want anything to do with you. But he will give us a couple of like pro tips on how to deal with those trolls and how to deal with squirts. We'll meet squirts.
Yeah, squirts. I love the land squirts.
What?
There's a cave here. A cave dungeon. Cave dungeons are a little bit different than catacomb dungeons. They're natural formations, obviously. But there's not a whole lot to them mm-hmm. generally in terms of design. Sometimes there are a few with more gimmicks. This one does not really have one.
Yeah.
This one introduces us to the demi-human.
Yeah.
Enemies, which are fucked up little kobold guys, goblins.
Like half human, half like ape kind of guys, orc goblins.
Yes.
Yeah. Just any low level dungeon, kind of creature from D&D, just throw that in here.
Yeah. Their combat gimmick is they'll scream and draw attention, of the other ones that are in the area. In terms of ecology, the interesting thing about these guys is, we'll meet him, next episode, but the guy who wants to take over Limgrave, who's the rightful heir,
mm-hmm.
Wants peace.
Yes.
with these things. There is so there's somebody who's trying to do coexistence, like, because we're under Godric the Grafted, just like the trolls, like, these are a subjugated shit on people, and you can run into roaming fights. Like, you can find sections of Godric's soldiers fighting them, fighting them off. There's at least somebody out there who's trying to make peace with them,
which is good. You don't usually see effort being made in these games or in these settings to, like, try and establish accords or set up an actual society, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's another, I love the way that this game feels active, and there are bits of ecology and culture. Mm-hmm. So we get to see how Godric deals with them. We get to see here what Kenneth Haidt would do with them.
Yeah.
Which, like, side thing, that's the name of a very prominent Call of Cthulhu author of the tabletop game.
Okay. Kenneth
Haidt. It's really bizarre every time somebody just says, I'm Kenneth Haidt. And I'm like, fuck, man, that guy's been on the H.P. Lovecraft podcast, like, all the time. And then we eventually get to see what the Academy of Rhea Lucaria, mm-hmm. what their people are doing when we find the encampment of them up in the Northwest.
Yeah.
Like, different people are treating these creatures differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the kind of that kind of complexity that reminds me a lot of. So, like, one of the co-director of this game, or somebody who worked on it heavily up, was the director of Dark Souls 2, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a huge strength of Dark Souls 2, mm-hmm. is that it felt like these areas had individual cultures.
Yes.
You know, the joy of Dark Souls 2 was figuring out how each of these different kingdoms dealt with the undead curse.
Yes.
We're getting shades of that in Elden Ring as well.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it's kind of more mundane things, you know, just like, how do we treat this, you know, like, how do we treat this kind of, like, different race of people? Like, do we subjugate them? Mm-hmm. Do we marginalize them? You know, like, that is, you know, a little bit less, like, profound and existential than this curse kind of thing, and kind of speaks more to their individual values of these different places. And again, just showing the petty tyrant tin pot reign of Godric here.
Yeah, what a piece of shit. The boss of this are two demi-human chieftains and a couple of demi-humans with them. If we bought a note, we can learn that when you beat the boss, you beat the chieftains, mm-hmm. the demi-human lackeys will just kind of cower.
Yeah.
And these are just kind of aggressive, bigger versions.
Yeah.
Of the regular demi-humans.
This ends up being tough to do early on, just because this is, you know, the first of these boss fights that is a big fracas. It's you against, mm-hmm. like, you know, two big guys and, you know, three or four little guys.
Well, especially before you get the spirit summon.
Yes.
You know, so where you're just taking all the aggro.
Mm-hmm.
I did not notice it, but you can leave this cave through the back. The first time I went here, I just, like, went back to the beginning, you know, did the teleport back,
mm-hmm.
thing like an idiot. And I was like, how do I get to that fucking island? You go up the back of this, you go through this underground tunnel, ended up in this church off the coast called the Church of Dragon Communion. There's two of these in the world. They have big petrified dragon corpses in them. In this world, there was also a war against the dragons, because
mm-hmm.
it's a FromSoft game. And the way dragons fit into this world is really interesting. You can get dragon hearts by being dragons in this game and start getting dragon-related spells, incantations. This is warriors in this world who got very, very jazzed by the war against the dragons, started eating these dragon hearts to do this. And you become more and more dragon-like. this is reflected in your character. Yeah. Your eyes will change,
mm-hmm.
As you do this. Really neat.
Yeah. I like that much better than the Dark Souls 1, or even the Dark Souls 3 version of this, which is you get stuff to equip that makes you more dragon-like, you know?
Yeah. You just turn into a dragon for a little bit. Like, you use a little item and it turns your torso into a different thing.
Right. Yeah. It's this is neater. I also like that dragons are a going concern. I mean, we're gonna talk about a fight with one next episode. Like, you know, they are beaten and subjugated, but they still continue to exist. Right.
Yeah. They hang around. And again, the way that we're having these different cultural things, which feels like a blending of general FromSoft stuff, but then also this feels very Ice and Fire to me, mm-hmm. is that different characters have tried to make peace with them as well, which we'll talk about specifically with Godric the Golden.
Yes.
Or Godwin the Golden. They name characters the same thing. yes. the same syllables in the beginning of them. I'm going to fuck that up 1,000 times this season.
You mean Godfrey the Golden? The just one. I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. The one who was murdered in the Night of Black Knives. I'm going to do that countless times.
Mm-hmm.
So if that bothers anybody listening to this, heads up.
It is a common complaint, or at least a common remark about this. But it's also not the first time Frum has done it. Gwendolyn Guinevere, right?
Yeah, it's to show familial lineage.
Yeah.
If you go into that fog gate that was in the Stranded graveyard, and there's a spirit geyser that'll launch you back up there.
Mm-hmm.
These are little jets that you can ride on your horse up or down,
mm-hmm.
To kind of traverse cliffs. We can go into the locked dungeon. And this introduces a new type of dungeon.
Yeah. Easily the worst of them. Dear God.
The Heroes Graves. I was talking to Jeremy about these. Jeremy's come around on them.
Okay.
Which I was very surprised about because he hated them. But he introduced me to the term for these as Kaizo Dark Souls.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
And that seems about right.
Yeah.
Right?
That's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. These are nasty little fucks. they are Sun's Fortress-y, you know?
Yeah.
Kinda.
A little bit. This one is what if an entire dungeon was the Executioner's Chariot fight, or at least the first phase of the Executioner's Chariot fight from Dark Souls 2?
But with instant death.
Yes.
The kind of primary feature of these things are these chariots that roll around, killing you instantly and you having to make runs between them.
Yeah.
It's a huge pain in the ass. They're really annoying. You can deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
You can kill the chariot. There's a way to do it. And you get cool stuff for doing it.
Yeah.
It's just not intuitive and hidden.
Yeah. I had to read an article on like Polygon or something like that saying like, hey, here's how you make this bearable at all.
This is the easiest of them.
Yeah.
By far. They get way harder than
I spent so much time here. Like, and I came back when, you know, like it was after I had beaten Godrick. You know, so it wasn't like right away. Like I was probably roughly appropriately leveled for it, and it still took me for fucking ever. I just was resigned to losing a bunch of souls here. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty big bummer. I have not come around on them yet. In my second playthrough where I'm trying to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I will do them. You know, I will power through. Once you get the flask of physic,
yeah,
it makes it a lot easier because you can make yourself tank one hit.
Yeah.
You know, as one of the tiers you can throw in there, but real bummer, at least initially.
Yeah.
There are a couple different bosses in here. Did you find the equivalent of the Ring in Favor of Protection
in here? No, I didn't. Where? What is that?
It's called the, I think it's called the Erdtree's Blessing.
Okay. Yeah.
You have to fight, two grafted scions.
Oh shit.
For it. One of them, is at the end of a long kind of, bridge.
Okay.
And then once you go over and grab the item, another one drops behind you.
These dicks.
So, yep. real, real huge dick, but you get a Ring of Favor and Protection.
Uh-huh.
You know, you get an item that increases HP, FP and stamina, or equip burden, not FP.
Yeah.
So quite good.
Yeah.
The main boss of this is you fight the Ulcerated Tree Spirit.
God, I hate
this is
thing.
My least favorite of the recurring bosses.
Oh my God. When these things start popping up as just like regular mini bosses out in the world. I can't read these things at all. And the fact that they have an effect that even is still, an attack that is basically still instant death. That feels like they can fire off at any given time is just why
they, I think these are, this is, you know, I love Elden Ring. I hope that comes through in this thing. I think these are actually like a pretty bad design.
Yeah.
And the reason why is that, you cannot intuit what their hurt box is.
Yeah.
They flail around and flop around and become real wiggle worms.
They're real twitchy.
The trick is most of the time when they do this, it won't actually hurt you.
Yeah.
But some of the time it does, and there's nothing that's readable to understand which ones will hurt you or not.
Yeah. Its primary verb is to undulate. And even if the one movement that they're doing right now will not hurt you because that's just what this sick tree does. It might be getting in position to do the chomp on you, you know, to pick you up and, you know, do the instant death kind of thing. I still regularly just eat shit with these guys.
They suck. If I can cheese them, I do.
Yeah.
Like I try, you can't if they're in a boss arena, but I try to find a way where they can't get into an alcove and I just plink them down. Just really not fun to fight.
Yeah. I like the way they look. Like they look incredibly gross. You know, they're gigantic, like fleshy, big gooey, like tree dragons, that are covered in lesions and stuff like that. Just got like your roots and stuff hanging off of them. Yeah.
Clearly a result of the Erd tree not doing so great.
Yeah.
You know, after it dropped all the seeds and the shattering, like parts of it are getting corrupted.
Yeah.
You know, or parts of its spirit. I hate fighting them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I generally really like the difficulty level of Elden Ring.
Yeah.
But there are some things that just feel really unfair. And this is not something you should be fighting early on.
No.
You could technically do it. Mm-hmm. And you get a good reward. As I mentioned, you can go down there and do that suicide run and get a Ring of Favor protection, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And if you kill this guy, you get a really good Spirit Ashes.
Yeah. Banished Knight Oleg.
To have enough FP for it, but it's incredibly good.
Yeah. Oleg, he's one of two knights called the Wings of the Storm. And he's a hero. Like, he was banished, but he earned his way back into favor with the lords by killing 100 traitors, which I'm thinking, yes. I've killed way more than 100 things. Make me a, you know, bury me in a hero's grave. Come on.
How many penguins have I killed? I am fucking legend. So the reason, like, this guy is here, you're going to find a hero in all of these.
Yeah.
They're called Heroes Graves. These are for warriors who are given the honor of an Erd Tree burial.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that's different than the normal burial that is in the roots of an Erd Tree.
Right.
But that is a proper noun that's referred to in descriptions.
Yeah.
An Erd Tree burial.
But the fact that you get their spirit ashes implies that things are wrong. You know, if they were given this burial, they should probably have been reincorporated.
Yeah. And also you're just going to summon his spirit up.
Yeah.
You know, but very powerful, especially for this point in the game, if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
You head on up to Limgrave Grove, this area, you know, this direct line to Stormvale. There's a sheer cliff that a catacomb is set into. So we have to actually kind of route around this area, you know, to kind of get past this area by the Church of L.A. There are these woods that are patrolled by some of the Godric's Lord Sworn soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So these are just basic knights. Yeah. And then there's the knights. There's the knights with shields. And then there's the footmen.
Mm-hmm.
Like the three different classes.
Yeah.
And this is where we first meet the Land Squirts. These are little pods.
Mm-hmm.
Squirt poison at you and kind of fall over.
Yeah, they're kind of modeled after like anemones is what they are. If you find a way to poison them, you know, just hit them with a dart or hit them with some gas, they will explode. They'll do their little rupture, and that can cause some chain reactions, which is something you're going to do for fun. These things are not necessarily very difficult to kill on their own. I just think that they're real gross, just kind of hanging around like little hemorrhoids in the wetlands.
They're disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah. The note is the thing that tells you can overload them with poison.
Yeah.
Which is a weird oblique way that teaches you how to deal with a tough boss as well.
Mm-hmm.
You'd expect that something that is poison related would be strong against poison. And that's not the case in this game. Up here, there's a cave we can get into. This is full of wolves. We get like alpha wolves.
Yeah.
Here. You kill enough wolves in this to like be the subject of a Sally Struthers like commercial.
In the arms.
I think I mentioned this last episode, but it's like if my girlfriend was ever watching me play this, I just imagine her being like, why'd you kill that wolf?
It was coming right at me.
Yeah, I don't know. I kill lots of wolves. They're not beautiful and majestic to me.
I love the little story here, though, because like the Godric, Godric forces, they thought that they could set up a little camp here. This cave is just strewn with their bodies, and the wolves are just kind of hanging out around their campfire and stuff, and on their broken camp gear. It's like they set up and they didn't realize, oh dang, like this is actually a den. God, those dipshits.
It would happen. They might have been here specifically to try to get to the boss of this area. The boss of this is the Beast Man of Farum Azula, who is a big bestial humanoid man. He's got this rough machete, generally does kind of combos at you. This guy definitely becomes a regular enemy later in the game.
Yeah.
But this is the first mention of Farum Azula. We don't know anything about Farum Azula yet.
No.
But it's real important. And the reason why this guy is here makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
He was likely cast off here and then took shelter in this cave. You can imagine the Godric soldiers trying to hunt him down.
Yeah.
At this point, Farum Azula is a home of a faction.
Yes.
A very late game area. Mm-hmm. The last major dungeon.
Yeah.
Of the game, really. So we'll talk about that more later. We don't need to spoil that because reasonably people could not be there yet.
I was real surprised when I saw that name pop up when I was going back through this stuff, because the first time I went, I was just like, oh yeah, fantasy name. There we go. No, actually a big deal.
Yep. It's cool stuff.
Yeah.
But nothing really to the boss. And you get the Flame Drake talisman. It's a talisman that gives you fire protection.
Yes.
And, this also makes sense to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Based on that, this talks about that war with the dragons, the ancient dragons who came before the Erd Tree. They would protect their lord as a wall of living rock.
Yeah.
Gonna meet that lord.
And, unceremoniously, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
There's another dungeon here, another kind of the final of the biomes we're going to see for a while, kind of down in this valley, cropping out from the lake. This is Limgrave Tunnel. This is a mine is what this is. This will be a little bit of a rude awakening if you are anybody who relies on slashing or piercing weapons, because we got these miners here, who are like miners from Stonefang Tunnel, in Demon Souls. They have been exposed to the glintstone, and to kind of this earth elemental kind of force down here for so long that their skin is rock-like. So attacks are just going to bounce off of them.
Yes. These are also subjugated people.
Yes.
Here, not so much, I don't think, but in other mines, these will be supervised by Godric soldiers or by soldiers of the various factions.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty fun to fight. They have neat things. They can pull explosive rocks out of their backpack and toss them at you. They also sometimes have these like little flamethrower lanterns they have to pump up like a super soaker.
It's so good.
I love that. But unlike previous Souls games where upgrade material was kind of just catch as catch can, you can go here to find upgrade materials.
Yeah.
They literally mine them
in
the game. That happened with Stonefang in Demon Souls, but they kind of stopped doing it. When you get to a new area, you want to go and find a mine because it's going to allow you to level up your weapon to be commensurate with the zone you're in.
Yeah. The quality of upgrade materials you're going to find goes up the further you get, from the starting area. So finding one of these or prioritizing them is going to be a good idea because it'll put you ahead of the curve. Because you can just pick up upgrade materials off of the walls.
Yeah. And a weird little secret benefit to that stuff that I only started kind of using this, noticed on my second playthrough, is that it's also a way to determine whether you're in an area too early.
Yeah.
So if you're picking up upgrade materials that are appropriate for where you're at, like, that's great. If you're picking up things that are way above, like you can't even use them yet.
If you warp over to the dragon barrow.
That means, and probably it's too soon. Same thing with soul items, with rune items you can find. If you're picking up a bunch of rune 1 and 2, like you're probably fine.
Yeah.
And if you're finding rune 5s and 6, high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you the level of an area.
Yeah.
It doesn't always correspond to the boss because, again, bosses vary in difficulty.
But it's a good kind of rule of thumb, at least to let you know, like, how upset with yourself you should be that you are not beating these things that are just walking around. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
The boss to this one is a stone digger troll. We fought these before. These are the same trolls that are up on land. And there's not really anything different. You're just in a more cramped space.
Yeah.
And you can't be on your horse.
Mm-hmm.
And the reward is kind of crappy. You get the roar medallion. which maybe is good for certain builds, but
yeah,
I never used it.
No, it powers up breath type stuff, so I could see that being used for dragon kind of things. But like at this point, like maybe it will buff your shouts or something like that. But if you have one, you know, you only have one talisman pouch at this point, like that is crucial real estate, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're doing everything here and you've gone and grabbed the favor and protection thing.
Yeah.
Which you can do without fighting those bosses. You can throw a stone sword key in there and sprint down.
Yeah.
So do a suicide run. My favorite set piece in this whole area is the Gatefront Ruins.
Yeah.
Which is right up to the first gate around Stormvale that is, you know, gates off the next area. This is an encampment. What these feel like to me, and I mentioned this last episode, I think, is just kind of one, you know, eighth of a Demon Souls level.
Yeah.
Kind of plopped in the middle of a map, and it's a stealth zone.
Yeah.
Like this gave me that good Metal Gear Solid 5 Sekiro, like I'm going to sneak around and pick off patrolling guards.
Yeah. I'm going to wait until this one guy is isolated and then just kind of gum at the edges until I can make kind of deeper runs into the middle and get the good stuff there.
Yeah. I love it. Mm-hmm. It's really, really fun. There's a lot of detail in these ruins. This is a more populated ruins than most of them.
Yeah.
Ruins are another kind of recurring dungeon type. And they're populated by an enemy and they have an underground treasure room or boss room.
Yes.
They're basically all the same. This one has been fortified. Mm-hmm. Like this one has been hermit crowded by Godric soldiers to stop people from getting to Stormvale.
Yeah. It's a good strategic location too. You know, they can catch any and all travelers who are coming from these different regions and try and keep them away from Stormvale. And Stormhill.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that there is like they explicitly kind of build the stealth element into this because there are bugler enemies here. These are just regular Lordsworn kind of guys, but they carry horns. And if they spot you or if they hear trouble, they will blow their horn and gather and get the attention of everybody. And just laughing and giggling and smiling ear to ear when one of these guys fires off and I'm just leading a train of these Godric guys, trying to run away to reset their aggro.
Yep. Do not toot it.
No.
I love them. really, really fun encounter. Lots of like places for cover, lots of, interesting little like guys covering each other. Sometimes, people patrol with dogs, mm-hmm. which dogs can't like smell you or anything when they're hidden, but it does end up complicating your strategy.
Yeah.
Cause if you try to take out the guy, the dog can fuck you up because dogs are still huge pain in the ass because it's a Souls game.
Mm-hmm. And they move pretty fast. So, you know, even if they both aggro you at the same time, they will be running. You'll deal with the dog. And as you're dealing with them, if you're not paying attention, the other guy may have closed the distance behind, maybe catching you off guard. So.
Yeah. Yep. There are two grave carriages here. These are going to be a recurring element and one of my favorite recurring elements in the game. Every time they show up, I'm very happy. There are two of them that are parked here. And they have a treasure chest on the back. These are to carry, you know, presumably a big bunch of corpses
mm-hmm.
inside the grave part of it, but then also some treasure.
Yeah.
And you get a couple weapons here, a great sword and a flail.
Yeah. Good weapons. High stat requirements on them, but like for a dex build for flail and then strength for the great sword here.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you get something very important down here as well. The cellar that you go into gives you a whetstone knife.
Mm-hmm.
This is a recurring collectible that allows you to give affinities to your weapons.
Yeah.
I love how easy that is and how it doesn't cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an irreversible move.
Doesn't require a specific upgrade material to advance it.
Yep. You just, if you want to have a weapon and make it fire, you can once you found the appropriate whetstone. You just get the license for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real good shit.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to go further up there.
No,
you can.
No.
But by this point, you probably found enough sites of grace that you can meet Melina. And for convenience, we'll go meet Melina back at the church of Ella.
Oh, yeah. We'll meet Melina and then go talk to Rena as well.
Yeah. You can meet them both at this. It's wherever your third site of grace is.
Okay.
Is where Melina shows up.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about that as we rest here. Like you sit down, and instead of getting the usual menu, you get a cutscene. That's your character staring at the light of the grace, and then Melina just kind of shimmers into being at the periphery, stepping up to the side of you.
Mm-hmm. We recognize her from reviving us in the beginning. She pulls back her hood, reveals her face. She has one eye that is closed,
mm-hmm.
has a tattoo symbol around it. We're led to believe this is a missing eye. It is not a missing eye, as we find out much later. And she offers you a Honda Accord, as the meme has shown, that image that's going around.
Okay. I haven't seen that one, but I get it.
Just has her giving you a Honda Accord and says, use this to travel great distances.
Oh, that's
and the
good.
License plate says Torrent.
That's good. I like that.
It's very sweet.
Yeah. People have been lamenting, oh, you are maidenless. What she is offering us in exchange for a simple service, is that she will act as a maiden for us. You know, the finger maidens, they serve the two fingers, and they offer guidance and aid to the tarnish. She can help me transform my runes into strength and get me as far as I need to go. In exchange, all that I have to do is get her to the foot of the Aird Tree.
Yep. That's the deal.
Yes.
You know, in exchange for this, she gives you a spectral steed whistle, which allows you to summon Torrent, your horse, which is great. Mm-hmm. And Torrent has chosen you, so you have to treat Torrent with respect. Torrent is a very good boy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I would die before giving him a raisin, I'm not going to craft one of those Torrent healing items.
I'm not going to put that on my hot bar. No.
Mm-mm. No. But a weird little hidden thing is Torrent gets healed a little bit if you just use a flask.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Torrent is great. We talked about that in the last episode. This is how you get it. And it's whenever three sites of grace.
Yes.
She shows up.
Yeah.
So we're going to run into Melina a while, every once in a while. There is more to Melina, mm-hmm. obviously. We don't want to talk about it just yet, but we're also probably not going to drip and drab it out over the entire season.
Yeah.
So there'll probably be a point in which it makes sense to talk about the story of Melina.
Yeah. She is backseated for a while. She just kind of is there passively providing you with the ability to turn your runes into strength, at least for a little bit.
Yeah. She also doesn't know her whole story.
No.
At this point either. She's a character who like is trying to figure out what she's about.
Kind of like
a little summer to figure out what it is she does.
She's kind of like you. You as a tarnished know that you are to seek the Elden Ring and become the Lord. She has her own mission. Get to the base of the Aird Tree.
Yeah. When you go to the Church of Ella at night, which you want to do a woman appears, a strange glowing woman, appears, and beckons towards you.
Yeah.
By Blue Mist. This is the witch Renna. She's great looking. She has four arms.
Mm-hmm.
Just incredible character design.
Yeah.
I love this character.
Love her outfit. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And she says, hey, I heard rumors that there's somebody walking around with a spectral steed. Is that you? You know, are you Torrent's master? And you want to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
If you do, this gives you the spirit calling bell, which allows you to engage with the summon system.
Yes.
And the lone wolf ashes, which is very funny because it's three wolves.
I love that so much.
It's very similar to the lone gunman from X-Files. You're not fucked if you don't get this encounter.
Okay.
Because you might not.
Yeah, this is bugged, right?
You can buy this spirit calling bell later,
mm-hmm.
once you get to round table hold, but that means you need to get to round table hold without summoning at all.
Yeah. Might be tricky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to get a little bit deeper into Stormveil before that can happen, which would require a lot of dashing. I also like that she is here delivering this. This bell used to belong to Torrent's former master.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just a little like, hey, you know, this comes with the territory. Here you go.
Yeah. Bell came with Torrent.
Yeah.
It's an add-on. She kind of explains a little bit more lore about these spirits. These spirits are ashes that have not returned to the Aird Tree.
Yes.
So these kind of restless souls that you can press into service for you.
Yeah.
And she's also going to be backseated for a while.
Yes.
This is an exceedingly important character.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't find out more for a while. She is a mystery.
Yes. But we are kind of left with a lingering question. Instead of just saying goodbye and warping away, she pulls a little bit of a Vare as well. Like, everybody is trying to recruit us to a degree. You know, she just kind of wonders aloud, you know, how long will it take for you, Tarnished, to tire of your obeisance to the Two Fingers, tired of being obedient, you know, throwing your fate over to these emissaries for this order?
Yeah. Yeah. And at this point, you're like, I just fucking got here.
I don't know, like, who this is. Fingers? Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't know what that's about. You know, but ultimately, once you get the context, this is a really cool character.
Yes.
So, and that's what we're going to call it for this episode. We fought many bosses. We have gotten to the verge of going up to Storm Hill. Next episode, we're going to explore Limgrave East and et cetera. Maybe some into Storm Hill, depending on how long it takes.
Mm-hmm.
This is about how long the episodes of season are going to be.
Yeah. This might be a little bit on the longer side, aiming for about 90 minutes, but we got no problem going a little over.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big game. There's a lot to talk about.
There is.
You know, we're going to be here for a while, but we don't want to, you know, we don't want to stretch it too far. And we understand people are eager for more episodes.
Yes.
We want to make sure that the episodes we do put out are a good chunk.
Yeah. And I'll let people decide how this went. But I got to say, Gary, it's real fun being back in the trenches on one of these games, going through in this kind of detail.
It's been great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun to research stuff last night and look at things. Like, I've had on my phone the wiki, which is item descriptions, open, and I've been reading it before bed.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like, let's pull up armor.
Yeah.
and just learn about these different people.
Yeah.
I think this game just does that better than some of the other games that From has done.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, you know, but it is a very compelling lore set and history to me.
Yeah. And even here in this early area, you know, coming back to the beginning, remembering how at sea I felt, and then understanding how much foreshadowing is being laid out, even in these oblique kind of elliptical utterances here, names with a tremendous amount of meaning are being kind of seeded here. I think that is, you know, just best in the biz.
It is my favorite game that I've played in a long time.
Yeah.
And just for many reasons, it's fun to play and it's really fun to talk about and think about. We appreciate you being here. This is the first episode that is behind the Patreon paywall.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're here, you support us. We really love that. Since you're here, while you're waiting for the next episode, check out some of the other shows.
Yeah.
You know, we understand they're not for everybody, but at least give them a shot. You're paying for them.
Yeah.
You know, check out Watch Out for Fireballs. Check out Abject Suffering. Check out Days of Future Cast and The Level and Orb. Yeah.
And Everything to Guppy. There's a whole bunch of content here. And here at the $5 level, you're getting Unfilmable. You're getting the full premium episodes of, Abject Suffering. The full premium episodes, Watch Out for Fireballs. Yeah, there's lots of stuff there. So we're really happy to have you here. If you are looking for content, we are happy to provide it for you. There is plenty of it available.
Yes. And if you came back for the Elden Ring season, we've been back for a while.
Yes.
You can go back and listen to us talk about Sekiro, talk about mods, talk about Souls game music. Talk about other games that were inspired by Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of episodes of the show.
Yeah.
That if you're just now joining us, you have access to. They're not about Elden Ring, but sadly, not everything can be about Elden Ring as much as I would love it to be.
Yeah. So really happy to have you here. And we'll be back in 2 weeks talking about Limgrave East and maybe a little bit of Storm Hill as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And until next time, Umbasa.
I want to go home.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.